Well, welcome again to Just Talking It Up. This is Ross. Normally, you're going to be listening to my co-host, Janet, make this introduction, but Janet's not with us today. She's off on a much-needed vacation, and we wish her well. But we have a fantastic guest today, Mr. Dave Dravecki. He's not only a great guest, but he is an iconic Major League Baseball player in the late 80s. He's a stalwart in the Christian faith, and I consider him a good friend. Dave, welcome to Just Talking It Up. Glad to have you.
Thank you, Ross. I'm really looking forward to talking to you.
Dave's got an incredible life story. I'd like to start it out by asking Dave to take us back to 1987 when he had been traded from the San Diego Padres to the San Francisco Giants, and he developed a little bit of a problem in that left arm. Tell us a little bit about what was going through your mind. First off, let me tell you this: what he's about to tell is a story that includes his wife. Now, I don't have a 95-mile-an-hour fastball or a 12-6 curveball, but Dave and I do have something in common. I do know his wife, Jan, and I can tell you that Dave and I both married significantly above ourselves. So we do have that in common.
That's absolutely right. I way outpunted my coverage. That's
yeah,
for sure.
No doubt.
And, well, as a baseball player, I don't know what analogy you would use for that, but I'm just really grateful that God gave me her.
Yeah, she's a great lady.
You know, Ross, 1987 was a really good year for me. I mean, it was actually. There were some good and bad aspects to that year. I was with the Padres at the time, and things really weren't going well with my pitching. I was struggling and ended up getting traded to the San Francisco Giants, and little would I know how important that would be as I continued to play out my career, because I went to a ball club that year, ended up winning the National League West, and we went into the playoffs, and I had pitched two best games of my career in postseason play against the St. Louis Cardinals, even though we lost to them in trying to get to the World Series in 1987. So I was flying high. I was looking forward to 1988 and having a great season. And in the offseason, I had noticed that I had a pea-sized lump on my left arm. I was a left-handed pitcher, and the doctors did an MRI to see what was going on. And to be honest with you, they couldn't find anything conclusive. So they just said, let's just pay close attention to this over the course of time. And if nothing changes, we're okay. So I proceeded to start the 1988 season and was given the tremendous honor of being the opening day pitcher against the Los Angeles Dodgers. And life couldn't have gotten any better at that point in my journey. Went up against the Dodgers on opening day. We defeated them 5-1. And I thought I was on my way to actually winning 20 games that year. I was feeling that good about my career and that season. Unfortunately, I started having arm problems through the course of the season. And with being shelved, because I wasn't able to pitch, this lump had now started to grow. And by September of 88, it had become half the size of a golf ball sticking out of my left arm. And so the doctors went in and did another MRI for follow-up. And it was then that we heard that we had cancer, that there was cancer in my left arm, and it literally rocked our world and turned it upside down and inside out. And that was a very, very difficult time in our life.
Well, sort of fast forward, as I recall, Jan was with you in that doctor's office, and you prayed that God would lead you and be with you through whatever was to come up, and then you went through cancer treatment. Maybe you could take us through that particular part of it and your recovery, and then move on to August the 10th, 1989, when you pitched against Cincinnati that day.
Yeah, you know, it was a really interesting time. The journey through the cancer and the treatments was very difficult. The surgery was 10 and a half hours, and you know, the doctors told me outside of a miracle I'd never pitch. And so initially I started therapy simply to get used back in my left arm. But then things started to progress extremely well. And the next thing you know, the doctors are releasing me to go ahead and start trying to throw and to get back into baseball. And from there, on August 10th, 1989, after an intense period of 10 months of physical therapy, I ended up standing on the mound August 10th, 1989, getting ready to make this incredible comeback when nobody thought I ever would. And that day, I went up against the Cincinnati Reds, and we defeated them 4-3, and I pitched 8 innings and got the victory. And so it was just an amazing period of time. I was on the mountaintop. That prayer that Jan and I had prayed, where we asked God to give us the strength to endure what we were about to face in the midst of the uncertainty 10 months earlier, was now this wonderful prayer of thankfulness over the opportunity that we were able to overcome. And once again, I was able to pitch again. And so you can imagine how I was riding high. And 5 days later, I get my next start. I'm in Montreal, and things are going extremely well. And through the first game, and I'm on my way to another victory, and I go out in the sixth inning without any warning whatsoever, without any warning. And I throw a pitch to Tim Raines, and my left arm snaps in half, and I go falling to the ground. And, you know, it's really interesting. At that point, I kept replaying some words that were shared with me earlier that day through a dear friend of mine, Bob Knepper, who was a fellow teammate and Christian, who said, you know, Dave, it's not the miracle of the comeback that's so important in your life, but it's the miracle of salvation. And what God is doing is giving you a platform through baseball to share his love with those who hurt. And I thought that was wonderful at the time, but I was a baseball player. And I was focusing on the game, and now all of a sudden I'm laying on the ground with a broken arm, and all I could hear were Bob's words. And it was a very significant period of time in those brief moments of hearing God say to me, it's not the miracle of the comeback, Dave. It's the miracle that of salvation, that day I met you and you embraced Jesus, my son. And it's through that and this platform that I've given you that I want you now, through the pain, to be able to share my love with those people who hurt. And so from there, Ross, it didn't get any easier because I went into a deep, dark valley. And to basically sum up that valley, there were more surgeries, more radiation treatment, the reoccurrence of the cancer, not once, but twice, and then ultimately culminating with the amputation of my left arm and shoulder. And then I thought, okay, now I can get on with life. I've gotten rid of this problem. I can now move forward and get on. And little would I know that my journey through the darkness was not over, and I had to go into a major identity crisis now that I was an amputee and no longer a baseball player and deal with that. And along with that came clinical depression and many other aspects of the journey from an emotional standpoint that I would struggle with. And that was a very, very hard time in my journey. But fortunately, about 30 months later, after going through intense counseling for not only the struggle that I was faced with as an amputee, but also anger issues that I was starting to deal with, and unfortunately taking those out on my family, that I got to the other side and began to realize those words that came from Bob Knepper. You know, this is not the miracle of the comeback that's so important, but the miracle of salvation. And what God is doing is providing a platform for you to share his love with those who hurt. And we're about to embark on that journey.
And that's about the time that I met you, Dave, at a Focus on the Family function, a golf tournament, basically, right before the Promise Keepers session, one of the early Promise Keepers sessions there in Colorado Springs. And you may recall that we played golf that day. Now, let me just tell our listeners something about that golf game. And I want to come back to this. What you've just told is the most important part of the story we want to talk further about today, but just a couple of facts. Dave and I played together. And on the first hole, Dave, one-handed, using his right arm, he scuffed one, hit it maybe 75 yards off the tee, fairly close to the middle. And so we got in the cart, went on down, and we played that hole out. Now, the second hole, He took a driver and hit it about 200 yards down the center of the fairway. And I said, okay, that's a fluke. We'll see what happens on the third hole. Third hole, about 240 down the center of the fairway. So he gets back in the cart. And I said, Dave, I want to tell you something. Said, you know, I felt a little bit bad when you hit that ball the way you did the first hole. The second hole, I thought, that's okay. I said, to tell you the truth, you out-hit me on this hole, and I'm getting a little bit ticked off. And that is a true story. This guy is a competitor, I can tell you. But we had some great times that day. And Dave has been a friend. My father had cancer he died in 1998, but he had cancer in 1986. Then my mother later had cancer. And Dave's ministry, at that time Outreach of Hope, currently Endurance, helped my father and my mother through those times by reaching out to them and encouraging them through this difficult time. So Dave endeared himself not only because of himself, but because of what he did for my family through those particular times. But, you know, there's some interesting sidelines. I'm from Atlanta, of course, and there's a guy named Bedrock who came in both the game on the 10th against Cincinnati and the game on the 15th against Montreal as a reliever for you in that game, Bedrock Steve Bedrosian, and he lives in Atlanta now. Of course, Brett Butler was in both those games too, and he later played with the Braves, was traded to the Braves. So, yeah, very, very interesting. Go back a little bit, Dave, to 1981. I know that you came to know Christ, I think, about that time through another baseball player that you knew. Maybe you could share just a little bit of that story with us then.
Yeah, that was a defining moment in my life, Ross. I was traded from the Pittsburgh Pirates, who I originally signed with, and I was traded over to the San Diego Padres, and I was shipped off to Amarillo, Texas. And I was given a roommate, a new teammate who had just been traded from the New York Yankees to the San Diego Padres, and his name was Byron Ballard. And we met, and we began this relationship. And I remember, you know, a few days into it, that I had recognized some literature that he was reading, the Handbook on Athletic Perfection, written by Wes Neal, and I was intrigued by that. And so I asked him some questions, and he looked at me and he said, "Are you a Christian, a born-again Christian?" And I said, "Well, I don't know about that born-again stuff, but I'm a Christian because I go to church, and, you know, I'm Catholic." And so we began a dialogue about that. And then all of a sudden, you know, when we went into the born-again conversation, I just kind of backed off, and I got a little bit you know, to be honest with you, I didn't know what to think about that. And so I almost kind of pushed away. And he said, "Yeah, Dave, that's cool." You know, he said, "It's not an issue for me. I just, you know, I'm just here to be an encouragement to you." And that's what he was. And, you know, within a couple of days through conversation, he said, "Hey, I want to challenge you to read the Bible and discover who you are in relationship to God. Are you open to that?" And I thought, well, being raised in the church, why wouldn't I be? Even though I don't recall doing that in the past, why wouldn't I open up the Bible and see what God has to say about my life and who I am? And so that summer began a journey with Byron Ballard. And I think the most compelling thing that summer through this story is the life that Byron lived. It was real. It was authentic. It was honest. He didn't take the Bible and beat me over the head with it, trying to convince me of who God is and that I needed to accept him into my life and repent of my sin. Although that was a very central part of the message that I read in the scriptures, Byron didn't slam me with it. He just loved me. And he said, "If you have any questions, just come to me. And if I don't have the answers, we'll go find them. And I'll call people that I know who might be able to help us." And I thought that was so refreshing because up to that point, most people who claimed to be Christians seemed like they had all the answers. And, you know, here was somebody who was very refreshing and honest about, you know, who he was and the fact that he didn't know everything. And which was even more compelling in my desire to have this relationship with him. And over the course of the summer, through watching him and reading the Bible, and all of a sudden the Word of God just jumping off the pages, and it, you know, engaging with my heart I came to realize that what Byron was sharing with me and with what I was reading, that I only had one choice. I was living in there were two choices in front of me, and I was already living in one, and that was a life without Jesus. And I didn't want that. I wanted a life with him, and I wanted the assurances that come through Scripture. And so I recognized that I was a sinner. Nobody had to tell me that I was a sinner. It was obvious when I looked in the mirror, you know, that I was a sinner. And so through reading Scripture that summer and talking to Byron and understanding what Jesus did on the cross through his death and his resurrection and the shedding of his blood, it covers over the multitude of sin, all sin in the universe, past, present, and future. I mean, there was no decision. I was ready to embrace this person, Jesus, who had given this wonderful gift. And so that became a very, very important part of the journey and the story of my life. Extremely important.
You know, the interesting thing is about how he approached you. I know that as a believer, I also come in contact with people, and I've always felt that you need to know where they are in that journey. You may be the person introducing them to Christ. You may be there when they're ready to make that decision, or any time along that continuum, and we need to know where that is so we'll know how to treat them. If he had tried to beat you over the head with the Bible at that point, it may have turned you off significantly more than it might have otherwise, but he knew exactly how to handle you. And that's a great, I think, admonition and instruction to believers as to how to deal with people that we meet every day in terms of introducing Christ into their life. Do you still have contact with him, Dave?
I do. Brian is in my he's in my Hall of Fame. I mean, he is such a wonderful, wonderful man, and he's got such an incredible family, and he is still actively involved in baseball and helping young high school players and engaging with them and being a source of encouragement to them and just loving on them and then having the opportunity to share his faith with these kids. And so it's just his life continues to touch others, and God continues to use him in a powerful way. So it's been wonderful being able to connect with him. And you know, Ross, I look back on that time in my life, and I do believe that God was preparing my heart in advance of me meeting Byron. God is writing our whole story. He just doesn't write the story when we come to know him in faith and trust. Mm-hmm. He's writing our whole story. And so God knew my story from the time I was in the womb to the time I came face to face with Jesus through this friendship with Byron, and now years later through the pain, the suffering, the good, the bad, the ugly of life, and how he has used all of it to continue to draw me closer to his heart through the Scripture, through incredible relationships with people who love Jesus that are encouraging to me. And so it's just been amazing when I look back on all of that and I see the power of this relationship we're talking about in Jesus and how God works.
Incredible. You know, you stated something about God knowing us when we were in our mother's womb. Psalm 139 says that very specifically. And I always think about that when I hear this debate over when does life start? And we know when life starts. It starts at that moment of conception. There's absolutely no doubt about that. You know, the story you just told, you probably know Mark Richt, who's the head coach at the University of Georgia. He was being interviewed on a local radio station some few years ago, and he was telling his life story, much as the same as you just did. And he was telling about being at the University of Miami, and he thought he was going to be the next great quarterback in the NFL, and things just didn't go his way, and he ended up in a secondary role. And there was another man, a boy on the team with him, who was a receiver, and he said he was in sort of a similar situation, but he saw that he handled things a lot differently than Mark did himself, and he tried to figure out why. And the boy told him because of his relationship with Jesus. And he said that he went on and he watched him over the next year or so, and then they split up and he didn't see him again. Then one day when he was on the coaching staff at Florida State, One of their players was killed on a Saturday night, and they all got a call from the head coach to meet the next morning at 7 o'clock at the stadium, which they did. And he said that morning, the coach said, here's what happened last night. And he said, I, as a believer, don't know where you guys stand in relation to Christ. And I don't know where the young man stood who died, but I never want this to happen again. This was Bobby Bowden, the head coach at Florida State. And he gave his testimony. And Rick said, I came to know Christ that very day. And so it's situations like that either will make us bitter or make us better, make us come to know Christ or make us reject Christ. And what a testimony and story that you have to tell. Being the recipient of a number of the things that you've done through Outreach of Hope and Endurance, tell our listeners just a little bit about your ministry and what you do and how you reach and touch people. In addition to how many books have you written now? 20 or so?
No, we've written 10 books. And,
10 books, okay.
And we use those resources, Ross. That really is the foundation of Endurance. We use those resources along with a devotional that Jan writes and updates that I write to keep people abreast of what's going on through Endurance. And Endurance really is provision through the journey of suffering. And what is that provision? Our story, in some cases, the stories of others who have journeyed, like Johnny Erickson Tata. And what we try to do is we connect with about 95% of the families that we work with through the internet at our website, endurance.org. We send out provision packages, and in those packages is a Bible that we did with Johnny Erickson Tata called the Encouragement Bible through the NIV translation. We'll send our story, which we tell, the two of us share in the book, When You Can't Come Back. And it's really the journey through pain and suffering and how God showed up in the middle of all of that. And then we wrote a devotional called Do Not Lose Heart from 2 Corinthians 4:16-18 that we put in there as a way to encourage as well, along with those other resources when they are needed or necessary. And we try to be very personal with each family in relationship to that connection with the provision package. We throw a couple mugs in there that are Endurance mugs as a reminder when you're sitting there having your tea or your Java, that this life really is a life of endurance and finding the strength to endure. And along with that, the gals will put some neat little touches to it with some coffee blends or, you know, just special treats that we would put in to give it a personal touch. And we probably send out close to 400, 450 provision packages a year to those families all over the country. And on top of that, what Jan and I do when we have time is we will connect with people personally over the phone too. And that has been such a gift to us, you know, because we call to encourage, and it never fails. We're the ones being encouraged through the conversations we have with so many people. And you know, just seeing how God works through folks who all of a sudden find themselves in the midst of pain and suffering and are seeking. And through conversation, their eyes are open to, you know, the possibility that God really is who he says he is and he really does care about me. It's a wonderful thing to explore with people, and then to just come alongside those believers and encourage them has been just a wonderful, wonderful privilege and honor for us. You know, I guess to sum it up, here's how Jan and I, we like to say that God really, through Endurance, has given us the unique privilege of stepping onto sacred ground. And that sacred ground is the life and the story of someone we don't even know that needs encouraged and needs his hope as they face their trial. And so it's just been an amazing journey over 21 years of doing this. To see how God has worked through our story and in the lives of people.
Well, I've been privileged to be the recipient of many of those phone calls. Currently, my wife is in a situation where she's in fairly constant pain due to some back problems. And so I'll occasionally hear a ring in my pocket on my cell phone, and I'll look and I smile because I see Dave's smiling face come through. And the other day when he called, and I said, "Hey, Dave, how you doing?" He said, "This is the one-armed bandit." So I said, "Only Dave could say that." But Dave, you have touched my family at many levels: my mother, my father, myself, my wife, our kids, and I'm grateful for those touches. I'm grateful to be a part of your ministry. And I would encourage any of you all to go out to his website, make contact with Dave and Jan and the staff, and become a part of his team. If only prayer support, but other support that you might feel comfortable about being involved in. I can tell you that it's a ministry that is much needed, and what you have heard in terms of Dave's personality and Dave's heart come across on the show today, that's exactly him. There's not a phony bone in his body. And I know that many people have been hurt in their Christian walk, and sometimes by Christians, and you've heard the term real deal. Dave Dravecki's the real deal, folks. I can tell you that without a doubt. Any last minute things, Dave, that you could, anecdotes, baseball anecdotes that you could leave our folks with? By the way, we had two great interviews with Carl Erskine about first part of June, having awesome. To do with the movie 42. And he said to make sure when we talked to you to say hello, and obviously you said the same thing back to him when I told you about that. But boy, there was a strong believer too, and had a tremendous testimony. He shared with us the testimony of Jackie Robinson, and then a few anecdotes too. You might have a couple of ideas. Matter of fact, tell us about your first home run. I read about that, but maybe you can tell us about that.
Well, you know what, Ross? I think there's, first of all, one of the most amazing things about my journey as a Major League Baseball player was simply this. I was a little kid being raised in Youngstown, Ohio, where baseball wasn't popular. It was really all about football. And even though you had the Indians and the Pirates, you know, the weather there just isn't conducive like it is in Atlanta to be playing a lot of baseball. And as a result, as a little boy with this dream to be the next Sandy Koufax or Vida Blue, to see that come true on June 8th of 1982 was overwhelming. And the next 7 years and 115 days after that were just icing on the cake. So, you know, I got the privilege of actually seeing my boyhood dream come true, and as a man, continue to play a kid's game and actually get paid for it, and that was pretty amazing. You know, when I think about you know, some of the things that I've had the unique privilege of experiencing, I'm overwhelmed. I'm actually overwhelmed by some of those, and one of them is that home run. And I'll never forget. We were playing the Dodgers, and it was a 3-2 count, and Dennis Powell was on the mound, and he threw a pitch, a fastball, right down the middle of the plate, about the size of a watermelon, and I made contact, and it ended up being a home run. And I was running around the base paths so fast that the third base coach, Jack Kroll, was actually holding me up and trying to get me to slow down so I could enjoy the home run trot. And as I went by him, I said, "There ain't no way, baby, because the next time I come up, I don't want the pitcher drilling me." And so
didn't want to show him up.
Yeah, I didn't want to show him up. And so what was really sad about that whole story is that we lost 2-1, and I was the only offense. And that night after the game, Norm Sherry came up to me after that game, and he said, "Well, son, there's only one thing I've got to say to you. You should have thrown a shutout." You gotta be kidding me. After only giving up two runs and hitting a home run, you're going to tell me I should have thrown a shutout?
You use the old theory that you want to swing hard in case you hit it. That's what you did, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, so, you know, I had the privilege of playing with a lot of great players: Tony Gwynn, Goose Gossage, a couple of Hall of Famers, you know, Steve Garvey. And then with the Giants, I played with great players like Kevin Mitchell and Will Clark and Robbie Thompson, and, you know, experiencing, you know, the mystique of the Giants and having the unique privilege of actually now being back with the Giants and doing some public relations work for them as a community ambassador. I get to spend time with guys like Willie Mays and Willie McCovey, who are still around. And I mean, it's just amazing to be a part of, again, at this stage in my life, of such a wonderful game and an incredible organization. So a lot of good times and a lot of great memories and a lot of fun stuff going on right now as it relates to my journey through baseball.
You had a special night at Candlestick the other night. I saw it online and talked to you very briefly about it, where this was Cancer Awareness Night, and they honored you. Saw a picture of you in an orange, in a San Francisco Giants orange shirt with Jan behind you. And the only thing I thought of, she should have been in front of you.
Absolutely. Because she's really the one that needs to be up front and center and recognized for all she had to put up with me.
Well, you know, isn't it great to have gone through those kinds of things, though, and have a marriage that's stronger after all of what you've been through, as opposed to giving it up and shucking everything at a time when it's tough? And, you know, you say that to Jan. I mean, she was willing to go through these tough times with you, and it did nothing but glue you together and glue both of you closer to Christ. And what an example that is for people. That Lynn and I have been married going on 50 years, be 50 years next May. And certainly not all of them have been easy years, but she, like Jan, have stuck through the tough times. And that's a great message to marriages today. And yes. Dave, thanks so much. Yeah. Thanks for being Dave Dravecki. Thanks for being with us today. To all of our listeners, I'm going to be posting some pictures of Dave, baseball cards from those periods of time, and we'll post this show. It ought to be out in the next few days. And I would encourage you again to go to endurance.org and peruse what Dave and Jan do and their staff do. I can tell you it's a very real ministry to an incredible need that exists in our world today. Dave, God bless you. My whole family says to tell you hello, and we're grateful that you were with us today. Love you, brother.
Thank you so much. Love you, and please give your family our love. And we're just really grateful to have the opportunity to encourage those, and especially families that know of people who are hurting. Please encourage them to come our way so we can get those provision packages out to them as a gift. And once again, man, I appreciate you so much. I love your heart and our friendship. And I just can't thank you enough for the encouragement that you've given Jan and I over the years, you and Lynn. And please send her our love. And let her know, as I keep telling you, we keep praying for you guys.
Thanks so much. And thanks to all of our listeners. Go to some of the other shows on Big Brains Media. Thanks to JP and James Spann and all they do to make these shows possible. And to Janet, my co-host, please come back, lady. We need you. Bye now.